What? Jada said. I could go back into the White Mansion and—
No.
Baron said flatly. Take the Shee Sedu back in to me.
No.
Baron said again. Because it knows the true names of all the Unseelie, I pressed on. I could summon Cruz and try to compel him.
First, by the time you got in there and back out—
Barons growled.
A month or more will have passed. Second, you have no guarantee you could compel Cruz, even if you were able to summon him.
Do we have any other options?
How would you compel Cruz?
Barons demanded.
What leverage do you have over a walking dead man?
I scowled at him. None, and I knew it. The only leverage one can have with a walking dead man is the power to commute his death sentence, and I didn't possess that.
Don't fixate on something that won't work, Mac. That's a fool's game. If you have something you could use to force his hand, that's one thing. But if you don't, it'd be a pure waste of time. Got something?
I shook my head reluctantly. I wanted to do something, anything. But summoning Cruz without leverage would accomplish nothing. He'd simply refuse me and vanish again. I sat up straight, eyes widening. Maybe I didn't need to summon him by name. Maybe I could sift to him. Hang on a sec, I said, and focused on Cruz, willing myself to wherever he currently lurked. Ow! Shit! I exploded, clutching my head. Barons cocked a questioning brow. He's got some kind of repelling board between us. I can't even get a lock on him. All I got was an instant headache.
Dagus,
Christian said suddenly. What? I said. Do you think he knows something that could help us? Riordan said tersely.
Not a bloody thing. I've already questioned him.
Barons cut him a long, hard look, and Riordan snapped.
So what if I did? You fucks kept wandering off, and the Highlander was the right material.
I smiled faintly. So Barons had been right. Riordan kept Dagus from dying because he'd wanted to expand his family.
That's not why I brought him up,
Christian said tightly.
I'm taking him home. Tonight. The fuck you are,
Riordan said instantly.
The world is ending. He'll not be spending his last days in a cage beneath your bloody club. He's got himself under control, mostly. As much as I do, for fuck's sake. He has the right to leave this world and colonize a new one with his clan. With his wife. He has a family.
I winced, inwardly. Christian had no idea what fate awaited Dagus if we failed to save our world. But then again, no one seemed to have clued in about my fate either, and I wasn't about to bring it up. I was the Steely Queen now. Even if I went off-world, the moment the Earth died and all Fae ceased to exist, I would too. Not that I had any intention of leaving Barons's side to begin with, but the way I saw it, I was going to die whether I stayed or went, and I sure as hell wasn't dying without him, not to mention in front of my parents, for heaven's sake. Barons' gaze whipped to mine, and his eyes glittered with crimson sparks. You did not just hear that, I said with narrowed gaze.
Your emotion was so palpable, I suspect even Riordan heard you. You will transfer the Queen's power to another Fae, and leave this world if all appears to be lost. You will not die here, or there, or anywhere.
We'll discuss this later. His nostrils flared, and he ducked his head, looking up at me from beneath his brows like a bull preparing to charge, and that familiar, constant jackass way that told me I was in for a long-heated battle later. I arched a brow at him. Fine with me. We always had long, heated makeups afterward, too. Riordan and Barons exchanged a look. Then Barons said to Christian,
You may take him home.
Riordan snapped.
That's not what I just said. I don't care. I said he could.
Barons said softly.
And you and I will do battle over this one. If there was ever a time for a man to be with his clan, it's now.
To Christian he said,
Get the hell out of here.
Christian vanished. Part 3. Victory is reserved for those who are willing to pay its price. Sun Tzu. 51. Shadows of the evening crawl across the years. Mac. When people have absolutely no control over the things that really matter to them, they tend to do one of three things. Devolve into animals and prey on others, indulging their base instincts, wolves. Huddle in herds for comfort and safety from the chaos, sheep. Or invoke a rigid daily routine, affecting control over those few things they can while endeavoring to change what seems an inevitable fate. Sheepdogs. Over the next few weeks, our world split neatly into those camps. There were more killings of armed guards and mass suicides at the black holes, making still more work for those of us that fell into the sheepdog category. Violent crimes escalated. Rapes, murders, thefts, vandalism. People ripped out recently planted trees and drove utility vehicles through flower beds and public commons in a kind of, well, if I'm going, by God, I'm taking the world with me, attitude that was beyond my ability to comprehend. I share my mother's mentality about some things. I'd have planted new flowers right up to the moment of extinction. Baron says that's because some people can't stop creating, even lacking both audience and canvas. They create because they must, not for the world, but for themselves. Fortunately, the sheep were up to the challenge of tackling a new, more orderly world, and went through the silvers by the hundreds of thousands to one of the seven suitable worlds. They came from all over the globe, drawn by word there was a way off-planet. Christian had been sifting to various surrounding countries, alerting people to what was happening in Dublin, and telling them to get there as quickly as they could, then sifting out farther and bringing people back with him. The last time I'd seen him, he was stumbling, nearly incoherent, from repeatedly sifting with passengers in tow. The nine, meanwhile, divided their time between excavating the black holes to keep them from touching the earth and forming troops of colonies with governing bodies and supplies and escorting them through. The sheep, as I call them, are the backbone of society, and as some of them stepped up to the portals, they shook off their stupor and got downright excited, alive and alert, and I realized sheep could morph into sheepdogs under the right circumstances. As I watched them entering the silvers via portholes Ryden and Barons established with stacked mirrors, I felt enormous hope for our race. This world was dying, but seven more were being born. The sky was the limit for the future of our children out there among the stars. The joy I felt at the possibilities for mankind, however, was brutally overshadowed by the fact that if, and it was looking more like when, the earth died, so many of us would too. Not just those in my inner circle, but billions that simply wouldn't make it here in time. We had the weight of the world on our shoulders, literally. On a personal level, it was a complete and total clusterfuck. If by some miracle I were able to sing the song of making and heal the world, it would unmake everything made by imperfect song. All the Unseelie, Alina, and possibly Christian, Barons, the Nine, and Dagus would die. If I failed to sing it and the world ended, destroying the seat of the Fey race's power, all Fey, Seelie, and Unseelie, Barons, and the rest of the Nine would definitely die, as well as potentially Christian and the other hybrids among us. I would also die. But Alina would live. At least my parents would get to keep one daughter. So long as I didn't sing it, Alina would enjoy a natural lifespan. She wasn't Fae. She was a human, resurrected by imperfect song. You might think I'd spent all my time exhaustively searching my inner files. I did. For exactly 2 days. Then Barons and Ryden pointed out the unarguable fact that if the Queen had possessed the song, she would have used it, and not doomed their race by binding their power to the earth. If she'd possessed any useful clues, she would have pursued them. There was nothing in my files that could save our world, and I was of greater use meeting with Dancer, sharing every note of otherworldly music I'd ever heard inside my head, trying to finish the second half of the song. We worked day and night on it, to no avail. According to Dancer, what we were trying to do was impossible, and he didn't use that word lightly. We had no parameters, no idea if the second half was shorter, as long, or longer than the first. No clue if entirely new motifs developed in it. Art, he said, which song is a purely subjective thing, not a mathematical formula. It's up to the artist, and no one else's vision can ever be identical. Eventually, I had no more music to share, so I matched Christian, sift for sift, racing to get as many people through the portals and off this planet as we could. Our situation grew more perilous with each passing day. There were two holes we could no longer even excavate, the one near Chester's and the one near the church. Their ergospheres had become so powerfully distorting that no one could get within 20 paces without being sucked in. We tried tunneling up from beneath the street, working from within the underground caverns and tunnels carved long ago by the River Liffey, but the moment we began to break through, the ergosphere inhaled everything we'd loosed and grew exponentially, forcing us to concede defeat. Raiden tried to send my parents through to another world with the first wave of colonists, but they refused to leave until the last minute. Then came even worse news. Along with the decline of our planet, the true magic was declining too. Using it became perilously inaccurate, and we could no longer sift to gather humans to save. At times, the power inside me was a radioactive radiance. At other times, it ebbed to a faint glow. I tried repeatedly to return to the planet where I passed my initiation to ask the vast sentience questions, but I wasn't able to complete the journey there. Baron suspected we had a week left at most. Then one of the two black holes would touch the Earth, and when it did, we would find out the hard way what was going to happen. When you only have 1 week left to live, the pressing question becomes, how do you want to live it? 52. Closing time. Open all the doors and let you out into the world. Jada. I slow-mojoed into Chester's after parking my bike out front. The place was dark, the chairs were up on tables, and it was so silent. I could hear the faint hum of the geothermal power that fueled Raiden's domain. Closing time started playing in my head. I'd always loved that song. I watched a couple of semi-sonic concerts on TV when I was a kid, and by then the families on the different series I'd binged on started to feel like my family. You took it where you could find it. So I'd watched them growing up, going to clubs and having dates, and thinking about how it was going to be when I finally got let out into the world. School, dates, prom. Those ideas had all seemed so exotic and out of the ordinary, mysterious and thrilling to me. I'd wondered if I would ever be like normal people. Sometimes it seemed I felt so much more, yet in other places had voids where feelings should be. I glanced at the dance floor and smiled faintly, remembering dancing with Lore, wearing a red dress, how Raiden had looked at me. People on many of the worlds had found me attractive, but his eyes said, beautiful by any standards, in any century, on any world, woman. He'd seemed so much larger than life when I was a kid, and even now I still felt young around him. But I also often felt he might be the only person who ever really understood me. Dancer, who I'd been spending the last few weeks with, working on the song, going for insanely fast motorcycle rides, freeze-framing him around town, saw me through a filter. He polished me up where I had no shine. I loved that about him. Raiden's cool, clear eyes had no filters where I was concerned. I didn't need any with him. I'd had no intention of stopping at Chester's today, but each time I'd blown past the club in the past few weeks, on my way back from the Abbey, I felt such an irresistible urge to park my bike and walk inside, I'd finally realized he'd put some kind of spell on me again. He could do that. So today, when I felt it, I decided to call him on it. Tell him to quit using his black arts on me and leave me alone. No more Danny-come-hither spells. I was surprised he hadn't hunted me down like he used to, except I'd been sleeping at Dancer's every night. Not that kind of sleeping. Each night when we buttoned up the day and returned to his penthouse, I'd gone cautiously further with him, absorbing each new sensation. Dancer gave me no pressure, easing off whenever I wanted to, happy for the intimacy we shared. These past few weeks had been exotic for me, filled with deep, easy friendship, more hugs, kisses, and physical affection than I'd ever known, and a sense of belonging. All that affection was messing with my head, changing me. The nights had been incredible, stretched out next to my best friend who turned me on with his quiet genius and long, lean body. We did everything, made out like the world was ending, which it was, and ground against each other with red-hot desire and young, hungry bodies. But each time his hand slid down to unbutton my jeans, I caught and held it. Started a conversation, talked to him about anything and everything, until he finally fell asleep. As long as my jeans stayed on, I felt safe. Then I'd lie awake next to him, listening to him breathing, staring at the ceiling, wondering what was holding me back. I wanted Dancer to be my first, and I wanted to get rid of whatever was stopping me. I trusted him. He made no demands, never asked where I was going or when I'd be back. He had his own life and interests, and they wholly engrossed him, and we went our separate ways and had separate adventures, but came back together and shared our new parts, then had more adventures together. Being with him was as easy and natural as breathing, and we were learning so much from each other. From the day I found him, I'd considered Dancer mine. That was why I'd been so shocked to discover he'd had his own world all along that hadn't included me, with friends and girls who crushed on him hard. I loved him. I hadn't wanted to, but I did, and it was too late to change because once my heart went somewhere, I couldn't pull it back. It's a glitch in my wiring. I'd decided Riordan was somehow keeping me from going all the way with Dancer. Didn't want me losing my virginity to somebody that might die. Not that Riordan knew I was a virgin, but it would be a totally Machiavellian thing to do, a kind of don't let Danny care too much about Dancer because when he dies it might screw her head up and she won't be nearly as productive. I was so irritated by the time I got to his office, thinking about how he was messing up my life, again, that I blasted inside in full freeze frame, and my vibrations at 20-something are far more impressive than they were at 14. I no longer merely ruffle papers and hair. At high velocity, I can shake the glass in walls. His entire office rattled and shuddered as I stood there, peering at him from the slipstream. Then he was up in it with me, standing close.
What?
He demanded. What do you mean, what? I growled.
You only blast in here like this when you've gotten yourself worked into a tizzy about something. Get it out and over with. I have things to do.
Like paperwork? As if you were ever actually doing that. Is your tattoo screwing me up, or is it something else you've done? I got right to the point.
Screwing you up how?
Every blasted time I pass your club, your little compulsion spell tries to suck me inside. Get it off me. He dropped down instantly, and I followed him into slow-mo, then stabbed him in the chest with a finger. If you want to talk to me about something, text me. Don't use magic on me. I've had enough of that kind of manipulation in my life. His silver eyes bored into mine.
Each time you pass my club, you want to come inside?
You put the spell on me. You know how it works. He smiled faintly.
I didn't put a spell on you.
The instant he said it, I knew he was telling the truth. I can tell when he's being deceptive and when he's not. Riordan's modus operandi isn't outright lying. It's shaping words into twisty little pretzels of obfuscation. His reply was too straightforward to contain any twists. I stood there, wishing I could simply erase the past few moments from the chalkboard of my life. I just betrayed to Riordan that I'd been contemplating him with such frequency and intensity, I decided he must have put a spell on me. and he'd gotten that faintly smug look in his silvery eyes. Probably no one else but me would have noticed. One way or another, I was getting out of this one with grace. So, your tattoo doesn't have any effect on me whatsoever?
To the contrary. I'm the one it's a problem for.
No spell. He sliced his head to the left, and that smug glint shimmered a little. I exhaled gustily and said, "So it is because I can't stop thinking about it." He arched a brow, waiting. "Shazam," I clarified. "Each time I drive by here, I start thinking about him. You said you could help me." These past few weeks, I'd forced myself to put thoughts of Shazam in suspended animation, focusing on saving the world and Dancer, in that order. How could I justify pursuing something I wanted, just because my heart hurt so badly it almost made me puke in the middle of the night? When the world was silent, and I worried about where and how Shazam was, and if he was crying and all alone, when billions were going to die if we failed to save them. How could I leave Dancer? What if he died while I was gone? When I was a kid, my thoughts were so linear. Point A to point B. There was what I wanted, and what I did to get it. But when you get older, you suddenly have all these C's and D's and C's you have to factor in too. When I first returned to Dublin, I'd been acutely aware of how much time was passing for Shazam while I hunted for a way to rescue him and get us both back home. The more time that passed, the more worried I'd gotten that I would go back for him and he'd be gone. Not only would I still not have him, I'd have paid whatever price I had to pay for going back, for nothing. I dropped down into a chair near Riordan's desk, waiting for him to go sit down on the other side. When he finally did, I said, "You said you could find me anywhere with a tattoo. You asked me not to use it when you were injured, and I didn't. I want to use it now." Even as I said it, I wondered what I would do if he said yes. Could I leave this dying world? Dancer? Riordan rubbed his jaw, hand rasping over his shadow beard, and I had a sudden vision of that jaw tearing into a human thigh. The sleek, black, powerful beast he'd become, and I shivered. Yanking out a protein bar, I tore off half of it in a single bite.
"I believe we've got a week at most before one of the holes touches ground,"
he said.
"It would take longer than that."
A week? Mac hadn't told me that. But then I hadn't seen her in several days. Does everyone know? He sliced his head in negation.
"It would start panic. We're moving people off-world as quickly as we can. Tell me about Shazam."
I surprised myself by complying. I meant to give him a brief sketch, but once I started talking, it just came gushing out of me, like an ocean backed up behind a leaking dam. Shazam lived when I talked about him. I could almost feel him again, warm against my body, hear him muttering crossly, demanding grooming, attention and food. Always more food. God, how I missed him. I told Riordan about meeting Shazam on the planet Olean, with the teleporting trees, how he became my best friend and companion, the many worlds we traveled together, and the adventures we'd had. I reminisced and laughed and lit up inside. Talking took me back to those worlds where we'd played with zest and abandon when circumstances had permitted. I told him how I'd gone to sleep and woken up with Shazam every day. For 4 years, give or take, we were each other's whole world. We hunted and cooked and groomed and battled and ran wild. He was my rock, my teacher, my champion, my constant companion. And a day without my beloved, grumpy, funny, brilliant, depressive friend was like walking around with a limb amputated. Riordan listened, leaning back in his chair, boots on the desk, arms folded behind his head. And while I talked, he changed. And the more he changed, the more I talked. Those remote, silvery eyes warmed and came alive, developed complex, crystalline depths. He smiled, laughed, became fully invested in my tales, asking endless questions. Hours spun by as I regaled him with our zany adventures, and a part of me that had been frozen solid pooled into a gentle summer lake.
But it wasn't all fun and games,
he said finally. I shrugged, kicking a leg over the side of the chair. Whose life is?
Why did you have to leave him?
I closed my eyes and told him in a hushed voice about the last world I'd leapt into, following Shazam. Each one had its unknown perils, but this planet had several that in conjunction were a perfect storm. The portal on Planet X, that was what I called it because I hadn't been there long enough to learn its name, was on a small island in the middle of a lake. The inhabitants were primitive tribesmen with bizarrely advanced technology or magic, half-naked with elaborately feathered headdresses. They'd been doing some kind of ritual dance around the mirror when we came through, and obviously had experience with people or monsters invading their world via the portal, because there was a powerful force field set up that captured everything the moment it exited. The planet was also one of those that shorted out my powers. We'd leapt through, outracing a horde of monstrous night creatures on the last planet, with no option to return, caught between a rock and a hard place. Shazam was instantly trapped in a shimmering cage. Either I'd sped up at the last moment and dodged it, or, for some inexplicable reason, it didn't hold me. I know it was meant to, because when the tribesmen realized I wasn't contained, they attacked me. I heard Shazam behind me, hissing and snarling, trying to break free to protect me, but the force field held, and he started crying out that I should leave and come back for him later. I closed my eyes, rubbed them, and stopped talking. I never told anyone about this day. I hated this day. I'd relived it so many times, trying to isolate my errors, figure out what else I might have done. I fisted my hands and opened my eyes. Raiden was watching me with such fierce, quiet intensity. It made me feel like he'd been living everything I'd been telling him. You know how my mind works, I said finally.
At the fucking speed of light,
he said dryly. I smiled bitterly. I was wondering where the exit portal was, and how long it would take me to find it when I saw a shimmering reflection dancing across the tribesmen and sought the source. Across the water was an enormous, swirling array of endless mirrors, rotating in a dizzying spin. Impossible to tell how many, because they whirled in an endless circle. Maybe 100,000. Maybe 1,000,000. It was as bad as the Hall of All Days. They never stopped moving, catching the sun, splashing it across us. And I thought, okay, I'm going to swim, do a mad dash into a mirror, and whatever world I come out on, I'll get a bunch of weapons and go back and rescue Shazam, right? He closed his eyes and shook his head.
You chose the mirror that brought you home.
Bingo, I said wearily. I told him I'd be back for him. Wait for me, I said. Don't go anywhere. If you get free, don't jump through another mirror or we'll never find each other again. I swear I'll be back. I won't let you be lost all alone. And he sat there looking at me with those big, sad, violet eyes, and tears were streaming down his face, and he said plaintively, I see you, Yi-Yi.
And you knew if you went back for him,
Raiden said quietly,
you might never find your way home again. There was no way to choose the same mirror. And if he'd gotten free, there was no way he could choose the same mirror you'd taken.
Exactly. My only goal was to get back to Dublin. God damn it, I lived that purpose for 5 bloody years. What if I returned and he was dead, and I never found my way home again? What if he escaped and left, and I went back for nothing? What if he didn't even wait? What if he took another mirror? What if he didn't really love me? I don't say it, but I'd thought it. And what if he waits forever? Believing I'll come for him, losing hope day after day? He cries so much and he feels so deeply. Raiden, I've been back for months. Do you know what that means? If he's still there, he's been waiting decades for me. Decades? My voice broke and the tears started to flow. I'd never told anyone any of this, and now that it was coming out, my heart felt like it was being ripped in half as badly as it had the day I plucked the crumpled Danny Daly from the trash and realize the terrible irony of where I was. I'd been so elated to come through to a world with civilization, translated guns and badass weapons. But my elation had fizzled, and I'd gone hard and cold as stone. I couldn't deal. I couldn't handle the pain. I love Shazam unconditionally. There was no abuse or manipulation in our relationship. It was pure, full of joy, trust, and physical affection. I'd never had anything like it. I'd lost the only thing that mattered to me. Again. I was always losing things. Just like my mother, the erosions just kept happening. I'd felt so much pain and grief, and I just wanted it to stop. And I'd finally understood why my mom drank and shot up. But I couldn't permit myself to do that. So I numbed myself the way I knew how. And these past few weeks, I'd kept the Shazam part of me numb, as I'd tried to let the other parts of me come back to life and do the things a superhero was supposed to do. Riordan was suddenly in my space. I bristled and tried to wheel away from him, but he pulled me up from the chair and into his arms. I snapped. Something exploded inside me, larger and more violent than even the pressure behind that damned fragile dam that had made me tell him too much, and I attacked him like a wild animal. I threw punches and kicks, cursing up a storm, calling him names, calling myself names, raging at the universe for being such a grand shit to me. I railed and ranted. I picked up my chair and smashed it to smithereens across my knee. I shattered his and stomped it to bits, then turned on his desk, that stupid fucking desk that a powerful man like him didn't belong behind, and cracked it down the middle. When I turned my fury to the walls, he got in my way, wouldn't let me drive my fists through them. I wanted broken glass. I wanted blood. I wanted something else to hurt besides my heart. I needed the distraction of physical pain. I'd been holding in so much for so long that I couldn't keep a lid on it anymore. I hammered at him and he just took it. Let me keep hitting him like some unbreakable Iron Man, swing after swing, catching my blows in his hands, other times just shaking off punches, lethal enough to stop a human's heart, watching me the whole time with a fierce, intense gaze. My fury vanished with such abruptness that I deflated like a popped inner tube. And there was nothing left but what I'd been trying to escape all this time. Pain. I went motionless, staring up at him through a tangle of curls that had escaped from my ponytail. Opened my mouth to apologize, and all that came out was a long, unending wail. He put his arms around me, and I sank into them. Riordan's arms. Around me. So strange. So strong. Invincible. This man had always been my nemesis, my punching bag, my rival. But he wasn't now, and I was beginning to wonder if he ever had been. I leaned into him the way I leaned into Dancer, put my head in the crook of his neck and cried against his chest like a storm breaking loose, until his crisp white shirt was damp and wrinkled. And somewhere along the way, I started to laugh, because I'd gotten snot all over the crisp, flawless Riordan, and turned him into a crumpled mess, and I found that insanely funny. Then I was crying again until there was nothing left, and I was exhausted and quiet in his arms for a time, listening to the impossibly slow thud of his heart. "Can you help me rescue Shazam?" I said finally. He stiffened and my heart sank like a stone to the bottom of that heated lake that separated me from Shazam. I drew back and looked at him. He tucked a strand of hair behind my ear, his gaze shadowed by sorrow.
"If you told me this as soon as you got back, yes. But Danny, we don't have enough time now."
"How long would it take?" I cried, anguished.
"Impossible to predict. I'd have to go through, figure out how far from Earth Planet X is, and how many mirrors I'd need to stack to create a tunnel. It's complicated. I'd have to die to get back out. The biggest variable is how long it takes me to get back from dying. And between the IFPs and the black holes, I'd have to go about it very carefully."
"You mean it's not like a 3-day resurrection or something?" His gaze shuddered.
I don't talk about this.
I said impatiently, Riordan, we both know if you were going to kill me, you would have done it a long time ago. I hacked your security cams. I saw you turn into the beast. I know your secrets, and you know mine. That's as close to family as you can get.
I haven't even begun to plumb your secrets,
he said.
And you didn't hack them. Your boy genius did. We found the calling card he left.
He left a bloody calling card? He hadn't told me that. I was furious that he'd taken such a ridiculous chance. But then I started to smile. That was my dancer. No fear. I loved him for that. Riordan flinched, and I got the impression he'd just heard me think that. And apparently I'd been right. He didn't like the thought of me caring about someone we both knew could die any day. My smile vanished because I despised myself. If I'd told Riordan as soon as I'd returned, if I'd trusted him, he could have helped me rescue Shazam. Assuming my testy, adorable beast was alive, he'd be here with me right now. I'd blown it. R-E-G-R-E-T. I can spell that word now. Raw, endless, grief, raining, eternal, tears. That's what regret is.
You had no reason to trust anyone, Danny,
he murmured.
And every reason not to.
Yes, I did have a reason, and a big one. Trusting would have saved him, I said bitterly.
You're not allowed to beat yourself up. Only I get that privilege,
he said. And I smiled faintly with brittle humor. Can't you mark the silver from this side? I hated the way my voice broke on the words. That was what I'd spent the majority of my time seeking. A spell to etch a symbol on the mirror that would show on the other side, guaranteeing we could find our way home. We'd have to be fast to hit the right silver, but Shazam and I were speed demons. Still, if I hadn't searched, if I'd only trusted and asked, if only. I got it now. My people got so fucked up as they grew older. Impossible choices. Impossible trade-offs. Each erosion had a price you carried in your heart, forever.
Barons and I tried to devise a way to do that for a long time, with no success. You said they caged him. It's been decades. Do you really believe he's still there and alive?
My hands fisted behind his neck. I have to try. He said nothing for a time. And I stood there with his arms around me, in no hurry to step away because it felt so quiet and solid and safe. With Dancer, it felt quiet and solid and safe too, but in a different way.
Wait a few days. If all appears hopeless on Earth, we'll go through together and save him. But you have to promise you will never try to return to this planet.
I can't promise that. It's my home. Maybe we can make it back in time.
You wouldn't know until you tried. And the odds are high you'd die. You should have left already, with the other colonists. Go somewhere. Live.
He started to speak, then stopped, shook himself, and said roughly,
We'll take Dancer with us. The three of you can make a life somewhere for yourselves.
Right. So I can watch Dancer die. Here and now I could deal with my boyfriend's condition, but go off with him to a new and potentially dangerous world? Start a life, maybe one day, even start feeling safe and have children, only to lose him? God, why were there no easy choices anymore?
How many fucking people do you think I've watched die?
His silver eyes flashed crimson.
Over and over. That's what you do. You love them while you have them, and when they're gone, you grieve. That's life. At least you had them for a while.
I stared up at him, realizing that just like Dancer saw only part of me, I saw Riordan through a filter too. And right now, I was seeing him in a way I never had before. He'd loved. Many times. Deeply. And he'd lost countless times. And that was why he fought so hard to keep his men together. He was intensely controlled, because at the heart of it all, he cared intensely. And even though he was immortal, he'd never turned off emotion. I narrowed my eyes, staring into his gaze, startled by how similar we were. He felt as fiercely as I did, and like me, he'd donned his own version of my Jada persona. He slipped it on every day, with his crisp, businessman attire, his aloofness, his calculation.
Do you know why I didn't kill Rowena?
Ro? I shook my head, not following the sudden leap in conversation, still off kilter by how differently I was seeing him now. He'd become a whole person, not a caricature of my arch-nemesis anymore. A man. His hands were on the sides of my head then, and he was urging me to close my eyes with his mind. And this was a spell of compulsion, because they drifted shut without my permission, and he filled my head with images and I stared at the visions in horror, because he was showing me that his childhood had been so much worse than mine. It was brutal, and savage, and punishing, and desperate, and Riordan had actually been a child once, some kind of child. And he'd been so badly abused, I couldn't believe he'd survived it. One man had done it all to him, and his hatred of that man who kept him chained in a dark hole in the ground had been so consuming, there had been nothing of a little boy left. But one day he'd escaped, like me, and he'd sworn vengeance. But the man who'd so heinously abused him was killed before Raiden got the chance, and he'd been cheated of his vengeance. He said,
"For 32 years, 3 months and 18 days, I carried rage and hatred for everything and everyone in my heart. 32 years I walked around, dead inside except for a single emotion, fury. Then I found him, alive. I'd been deceived. He hadn't died. The bones I'd dug up and crushed to dust weren't his. His friends had protected him, lied, transported him away."
Another image. Riordan killing a man who was well into his 70s. Snap of a neck. Life to death in an instant. "And it didn't make you feel any better," I murmured, lost in another ancient time. He took his hands from my head and I opened my eyes.
"Wrong. It made all the difference in the world. The moment I killed him, the poison inside me vanished. I was weightless, free. I was born that day. I needed the vengeance. I needed to kill him. Right or wrong, that's who I am. Sometimes people take too much from you, and you have to take back."
I nodded. I understood. Killing Ro would have soldered shut a weeping wound inside me, but as a teen I'd stayed my hand for one reason alone. The other she-seers would have ostracized me, and I'd wanted to be with them. When you're young, people don't believe you can think straight and have good reasons for things. Matt could have gotten away with killing her because an adult's word carries weight. Mine didn't. I wouldn't have felt one ounce of regret. I would have felt that a rabid dog had been put down, and that was what you had to do with rabid dogs. I wouldn't have tortured or drawn it out. I never do. And yes, it would have made my anger go away, especially after I'd learned the extent of her involvement with my mother. I would have felt that justice had been served.
"I wanted to kill Rowena more than you know, but I wanted you to do it more."
I inclined my head in a wordless thank you.
"Get Dancer,"
he said.
"I'll take you through and help you free Shazam. But then the three of you will leave that world for a new one and never look back. Seize life, Danny. For fuck's sake, I saw your mother's plaque."
"Right. And who's the snoop now?" I said, with a strained, wry smile, but sobered instantly. "Mac told me a few weeks ago that you're bound to this planet, reborn here. So if the planet is destroyed, you'll die too?" Although she'd said she wasn't certain if the Nine would die instantly or continue living until they were killed, then not be able to be reborn. Regardless, it would be the end of their immortality. Instantly, or within a normal lifespan.
"Max talking too much."
"The world's ending. Get over it." I reached up and touched his hair, traced the planes of his hard, chiseled face. I was touching Riordan, and he was just standing there, letting me do it, looking as surprised as I felt. This touching stuff was addictive now that I'd begun doing it. It freaked me out. I didn't know the rules. Part of me wanted to hug everyone and see how they all felt. Part of me never wanted to hug again. I resented the intensity of all the emotions I was feeling. Things had been so clear as Jada. Nothing was clear anymore. Except that Riordan was strong and electrifying and so bloody alive. And in a week, give or take a few days, whether I went through to Shazam or went where a superhero should go, to lead the colonists on another world, relinquishing my personal desires because that's what superheroes did. And you never saw a happy superhero. He might be dead. I'd never get to see him again. I'd lose my arch-nemesis and my mentor and the man that felt so much joy you could almost catch in your hands when he laughed. I didn't want him dead. I wanted him to be immortal and always out there with something to tell me, doing something to challenge me. I wanted to know he was alive somewhere. Always. I didn't think before I did it. I stretched to my full height and kissed him, like I kissed Dancer. Soft, sensual butterfly wings against his lips. Unlike the last kiss I gave Riordan, this wasn't one to provoke or challenge or say, "Fuck you, can't touch this." It was a kiss that said simply, "I see you, and admire you, and want you to live." He froze. And just when I was realizing what an idiotic thing I'd done, and began to pull away, the temperature in the office ratcheted up 50 degrees like the air was on fire, and I was on fire and so was he, and he was kissing me back in a way I didn't know a kiss could be. It was so different than kissing Dancer. Dancer's kiss was sweet and dreamy and exciting. Riordan's kiss had razor edges, sharp and dangerous as the man. Being in Dancer's arms was like living on the edible planet. Being in Riordan's was like stepping into the eye of a cyclone. Dancer was easy laughter in a normal future, sans abrupt death. Riordan was endless challenge and a future that was impossible to imagine. Dancer accepted me, any way I wanted to be, without question. Riordan made me question myself and pushed me to be the most I could be. Then my hair was loose and his hands were buried in it, and he was kissing me so deeply his fangs grazed my teeth, and I tasted blood. I was acutely aware of every inch of my body that was touching every inch of his forearm grazing the side of my neck, his hands cradling my skull, his mouth so soft yet hard, his powerful chest against the only part of me that wasn't muscle, one of his thighs slipping between my legs, making my knees tremble and nearly buckle. He kissed like he did everything, with exquisite skill, passion, and 100% focus. Here was where Riordan shed his aloof businessman attire, his cool facade, and came to life with the heat and intensity of 1,000 suns. And I realized that was what had so entranced me on level 4. I'd seen him drop all his guards and fuck like a man on fire, with nothing held back. Open, unguarded, just like he'd been when we'd talked. Riordan controlled is formidably fascinating. Riordan open is indescribably addictive. He kissed me like I was the empire he was sworn to protect and would die 1,000 deaths to keep secure. He kissed me like I was a woman with a deep, dark wildness that needed to be fed. And he knew just how to do it. He kissed me like he was dying, and this was the last kiss he would ever taste. Then his kiss changed, and his tongue was velvet and silk, as he kissed me like I was fine bone china that needed exacting care and gentleness. Then the storm built in both of us, and I ground myself against him, and he was searching with his kiss and his hands sliding down to my ass for the part of me that was a savage animal. And so was he, and we were going to forget the world and become 2 primal, uncomplicated beasts, fucking as if the universe depended on our passion to fuel it. And I was pretty sure we could. I felt something building in me. a hunger that was exhilarated to be alive, and knew it could come out and play as hard as it wanted, because I could never break this man, not even with all my superpowers. I could dump every bit of myself on him and never have to worry about giving him a heart attack or breaking a bone or giving him a black eye by accident. He could handle anything. My high temper, my need for adventure and stimulation, my intellect, rages and rants, my sheer physical strength, even the darkness of my shadow self. He was a broad-shouldered beast. He was hard and capable and permanent and had an immortal heart. A frenzy of lust exploded inside me, and I met the savagery of his kiss with all the savagery in my soul. And there is one fuck of a lot of it. With a distant part of my brain, I thought about Dancer, and wondered if he could handle perhaps a small portion of this part of me, and if maybe I was holding back, not just because I was afraid to be so damned fucking vulnerable, but also because I was afraid I might hurt him and... Raiden broke the kiss, and pushed me away so abruptly that I stumbled backward over the chair behind me and nearly went down. My body was cold where the heat of his hands had been. My legs were shaking, and I was so full of heat and need that I couldn't even speak for a moment. I just stood there, wanting him back, touching me again, holding me, taking me apart inside and waking every cell up. What would it be like to get naked with this man? Shut the world out and let go of everything, knowing he could handle all of it for me. Walk away from responsibility. Let him take over, feel safe. Get to rest, recharge. Go out into the world, whole. I regained my balance and stood, staring blankly at him. He'd opened a box inside me that I couldn't shut, not fast anyway. Wait, what? I shook my head, trying to clear my stupor. Why are you looking at me like that?
You need to leave. Now.
He gritted. That's not what you mean. Your body doesn't remotely mean that. I hurt from the lack of contact with his body.
You're a fucking virgin.
Oxymoron. I'm a non-fucking virgin. And there's nothing wrong with being a virgin. I kept it for a reason.
Get out.
He repeated. And his silver eyes went cold and hard as ancient coins. The open, unguarded man disappeared right before my eyes, and it pained me to see him go. It felt like being cut off from something sacred, like being deemed not sacred enough to get to see it. Right, so now you get to be Jada? I snapped.
Jada had purpose. I just didn't want you to be her all the time.
My hands fisted at my sides. I don't get it. You kiss everyone else. For fuck's sake, you kiss Joe. I'm as pretty as Joe.
You aren't everyone else.
He paused, then said in a rough voice,
And you're not pretty. God damn it, Danny. You're beautiful.
And there's yet one more reason why what you're saying makes no sense, I said angrily. He could die. What if you die and never get to kiss me again? Silver eyes narrowed, glittering with anger.
That's why you wanted to have sex with me? Because I might die sooner than Dancer, and you figured you might as well fuck us in the order of who would die first?
I bristled. I didn't say I wanted to fuck you. I was just kissing you, and you were kissing me back, and you were liking it. He stepped back, and the light fell in such a way that half his face was shadowed, one side clear and easy to see, the other concealed by darkness.
Come back in 3 days with Dancer,
he said, as tonelessly as I'd ever sounded as Jada.
We'll save Shazam. You'll find a world and make a home with Dancer and never return to Earth.
Fuck you, Raiden, I said, stung by his rejection, his icy remoteness, and my return to being on the other side of his infernal walls. For a few minutes, I'd been in the garden, and I'd been evicted.
Just said no to that,
he said coolly. I whirled and kicked up into the slipstream. Nothing happened. I was shorted out. Sometimes I really hate that man. At the moment, I really, really hated him. Pretending that I'd never even tried to freeze frame, I stalked from his office, slowly, long-legged and sexy as hell, showing him exactly what he was never going to have. I put into sensual motion all those incredible feelings that had been awakened in my body by him and Dancer. He'd had his chance, and blown it. Rejected me. No one gets a second chance with Danny-O, not even the great Riordan.
As the door slides closed, I rest my forehead against the cool glass. My office feels empty without her in it. The sun vanished behind clouds. She stood there looking at me with fire in her eyes, comparing herself to Joe, unable to see they weren't remotely the same. Yes, I'd casually fucked Joe. One doesn't casually fuck Danielle O'Malley. Her energy is nuclear, white-hot and pure as the new-driven snow. Passion is where she's united, suffering no conflicts. I might be forged of hellfire, but the woman-child is forged of pure energy and emotion, fierce and Valkyrie-strong. Another man will experience her raw self-discovery, the volatile nuances of her first time. I could have watched her talk for days, eyes shining, face luminous, heart blazing in her face so brilliantly it had illuminated my entire office, warmed my cooling skin. I still feel the burn of her hands on my face, in my hair, sliding down my body as our kiss took a much deeper, more savage turn. But a storm like me isn't what should come crashing down on the last vestige of her innocence. She needs a slow immersion with a gentle hand that gives far more than it takes. A man who will dance her slowly, tenderly, into love. She needs something the fierce-hearted warrior never had. A normal, good experience with a normal, good man. I'm not that man. Fucking me would make her more like me. Fucking him will make her more like him. I knew the child. I know the woman. She'll never be satisfied with a single lover. Danny craves experience, challenge, change, tempering, growth. She needs to taste it all. I understand that. One day she'll choose a mate. She'll hunger to be a wolf running with a wolf of her own at her side, equals in everything. And when that time comes, she'll need to know she's chosen the absolute best. I am that man. But she has no basis for comparison. She'll give her virginity to Dancer. Soon, she's on fire. She wears my brand. I'll feel far too much of it. This time and every time. Immortal though I am, if I survive the next week, the coming years might seem my most eternal yet. I will never be her first. But one day, I'll be her last.
53. Girl, you'll be a woman soon. Danny. I stepped out of the shower and toweled myself dry, smiling, listening to the sounds of Dancer binging around in the kitchen getting dinner ready. There was only this moment, this night. The warmth of home, the delight of my best friend making a homemade pizza. The promise of a movie we'd pause more often than we played, so we could talk about everything under the sun. I'd made a deal with myself. No thinking tonight. No thoughts of tomorrow, or Shazam, or Dancer's heart, or the fate of the world. I know a truth. Worrying doesn't make tomorrow better. It only makes today worse. I wanted a single golden night before I made the hard decisions I had to confront. Mind neatly compartmentalized with my Jada parts put away and my Danny parts free, I dried my hair, ran my fingers through the tangles, then stepped back and looked at myself. Naked. Clear-eyed. No makeup. No perfume or lotion. Just me. I'd realized something on the way back to the penthouse. Sex with Riordan would have been just that. Sex. It would have been intense, wild, mind-blowing, Sex with Dancer was much more complicated. It would be making love. It would be sweet, tender, and heart-blowing. But hopefully not literally. I figured out a way to trick myself. Since Dancer taking off